Down to business on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland. We understand business. Choose the bank that's here to help you rise to today's business challenges and tomorrow's.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday's Down to Business. Bobby Carr here. As always, this is the show that talks to the most interesting people in Irish business. Today on the show, we bring you a very special show from Killarney for the EY Entrepreneur of the Year annual CEO retreat, which was held at the Europe Hotel. You're going to be hearing me talk to some amazing finalists from this year's award. You'll hear me talk to the high performance advisor, Gary Keegan, about what finally made sport great in Ireland. Alistair Campbell talks Brexit and Boris. Mountaineer Pat Falvey on the Everest we all face in our lives. And lots, lots more. You can tweet me at Bobby Kerr. We're also using the hashtag EOYIreland2021. You can email me at downtobusiness@newstalk.com. So, we're here. We're in Killarney. I'm really excited. Let's get on with the show. Now, we've just arrived in Killarney and we're about to enter the EY Entrepreneur of the Year CEO Retreat for 2021. The title is The Unstoppables. I'm really excited about what awaits us. I'm delighted to be joined by the partner lead of the Entrepreneur of the Year with EY, Roger Wallace. Roger, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Bobby. Great to be here.
Now, I hope you can sense the excitement in my voice, but what can we expect over these next couple of days?
Well, I'm really excited as well. We've got 150 entrepreneurs. We've never had more entrepreneurs for our EY Entrepreneur of the Year CEO retreat. It's the first one we've ever done in Ireland. Great to be supporting Irish hospitality with it. What we want to do this week is inspire, we want to inform, we want to challenge Irish entrepreneurs. They're coming out of a challenging period with COVID. They're leading their businesses through talent shortages, through supply chain issues and everything else. And through networking with each other, through listening to the best of international leadership, political leadership, thought leaders, we hope to go back into their businesses re-energized, pepping their step.
Would it be fair to say that entrepreneurs that are here, while they're all highly motivated and highly spirited individuals, you know, there are some that maybe did okay during COVID-19, there are others whose businesses have to be reimagined, re-engineered, recharged. Will one group help the other, do you think?
I think so. And I think the network helps people as well. I think, you know, being an entrepreneur can be a lonely place, as we know. They come into a group of peers, of friends, you know, collaboration, innovation, bouncing ideas and solutions off each other and getting real world practical answers through people who have walked in their shoes can be incredibly helpful. I think with people arriving already, we can feel the buzz in the air. This is a group that's, you know, a lot of whom have known each other for 10, 15 years. They're back amongst friends and there's real energy in the place.
Well, let's get on with the show. Roger Wallace from EY, partner lead of the programme. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And I'm delighted to welcome to the show Alistair Campbell. He's the former press secretary for former PM Tony Blair. He's a regular contributor on News Talk. Alistair, lovely to meet you this evening. You're here to talk to a room full of entrepreneurs. What is a guy like you going to say to this wonderful audience?
Well, it partly depends what they want me to say, because the format for the evening is going to be that I take in all their questions in advance. Okay. and then put it out there. But I imagine, I am guessing now they'll want to hear about Brexit. They're probably aware, not least from my discussions with your colleague, Pat Kenny, that I think Brexit is an absolute calamity for Britain. They probably want to hear about my take on Johnson, on Labour. So I'll talk about all that. I always, at these business dinners, I always talk a little bit about mental health.
Yeah,
because I think the business world has a massive role to play in addressing the stigma and the taboo around mental health. And the best of business are doing really, really good stuff on it.
Okay.
So that's the kind of stuff. And then I'll probably try and make them laugh.
We'll laugh at your jokes as well. That's always very important. Well, you mentioned a couple of things there that I want to ask you about. The first one being Brexit. If we look at the UK now, we look at a shortage of truck drivers, massive logistical problems, you know, food rotting in the ground. Is it Brexit coming home to roost? Are these the symptoms of Brexit that we're now seeing?
Yes is the short answer. I mean, it's true, as the government keeps saying, that there are global issues to do with supply chains at the moment. But the ones that we are specifically having, and the reason why we're specifically having them harder than other countries, is largely because of Brexit. And I never make the case that everything is down to Brexit, that's bad. But what I think, we're not going to address these until the government and the Brexit people at least acknowledge it. Whereas we live in this kind of fantasy land in the UK now. We saw it today with Frost, this guy David Frost, the unelected bureaucrat who runs Johnson's Brexit strategy for him, where they blame anybody that's there to blame. They accept no real responsibility for what's happening, and they pretend it's not happening. They pretend that the lorry drivers is not really about Brexit.
Well, and bringing in Lewis, the guy from Tesco, and they're only, are they only sound bites? Or,
well, I think you've got to remember about Boris Johnson is that ultimately he's a journalist. Now, you're an entrepreneur who became a journalist.
I went the
right?
other way around.
Right. He's a journalist who's still a journalist, but sadly, he's also the Prime Minister. And I think with him, it's about the story. You see that in so many situations where, look, Afghanistan, yeah. Right? A few weeks ago, we're out of Afghanistan. We're going to move heaven and earth to get the people out that we've left behind. What's he done since then? Nothing. You see it in relation to COVID. You've got an inquiry, this first parliamentary inquiry that's come out and says this is one of the worst health policy failures we've ever had. What's their line? Well, nobody was saying any of this stuff at the time. Well, actually, people were.
Yeah.
But they moved the story on. Because you've got our press, you know, a large part of our press, very right-wing, very pro-Brexit, they let him away with it.
So what is it going to take to, I suppose, you know, bring reality home to roost? What is it going to... Where is Brexit going to end?
I honestly don't know. And I find it actually quite terrifying because I think that... I was doing an event the other day with Peter Schmeichel, the Man United goalkeeper, ex-goalkeeper. He's got a book out. And it was at the Palladium in London. And we talked mainly about football, as you'd expect. But then somebody in the audience asked him what he thought about Brexit. And he just went, oh, my God. He said, what have you guys done? What have you done? And he said, look, please, please tell me none of you did it. Please tell me none of you voted for it. And I said, come on, let's have a bit of honesty. How many people here voted Leave? Not a single hand went up.
No way.
And I said, well, look, that is some of you are lying, but not a single hand went up.
Well, really.
So I think what's going to happen, look, I honestly don't know, because the problem in our politics, this is something else I'll talk about tonight, problem in our politics is that normally you have a situation where when people look at a government, they think, I've had enough of you lot. There's an alternative there. This lot, the Tories, they've been in 11 years. Mm. But every change of leader, they somehow manage to persuade the public that it's a change, right? And meanwhile, Labour, they're looking at Labour, and the country's just looking at Labour and thinking, well, I'm not sure. So while that's happening, we've got this kind of limbo land.
Yeah.
But I was at the theatre last night. Saoirse Ronan playing Lady Macbeth at the Almedia, right?
Yeah.
She's absolutely brilliant, right? At the interval, three different people came up to me and said words to the effect, there's got to be a revolution in this country. Honestly, people are just thinking, our politics is not working for us.
Yeah, well.
And I don't know what you do.
Let me ask another question. The sound...
That was not Alistair Campbell advocating violent uprising against the Johnson regime.
Just about the sounds coming from London, Alistair, on the protocol. Do you worry now as well? Like, we've done Brexit, but do you worry for the integrity of the Good Friday Agreement, as somebody who was very close to it?
Well, you know, I don't know if you've seen the Blair Brown documentary series that's on the BBC at the moment, on the iPlayer. And even though it just skimmed the surface, it did remind people, I think, just how hard it was to do the Good Friday Agreement. And like anything that's hard to do, it's usually easier to undo it. And I really, really do worry that this lot just don't care. When I seen that guy Frost today and the speech that he made with a little smirk on his face, and he's basically saying, well, the Europeans conned us into doing this. We were very weak at the time. They had a majority of 80.
Yeah.
They told us all the cards were in their hands, and now they're pretending. This goes back to the thing I said about it's all about the different storyline. So they're now pretending that they were forced to do it, and they've, you know, we've got to completely rewrite it. Look, this is a terrible thing to say because he's the Prime Minister of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. I honestly don't think they care.
Yeah, wow.
I think as long as they feel there is a narrative that they can communicate to the public, to a fairly narrow strand of the public, the ones that they want to hold on to, that they got to vote for them in the last election, got them to back Brexit, I think they don't mind. What you've got with the European Union, I mean, I'm not pretending the European Union is perfect, and I'm certainly not pretending every leader of every European country is perfect. But they're kind of, when you think about people like Merkel and Macron and your guy here and Varadkar before him, they're kind of serious, rational people looking at a problem and thinking, right, well, how do we solve this? I think you've got with Johnson and Frost and these guys, that's not how they operate.
Yeah.
That's not how they operate. Trump was exactly the same.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And so they think, what the British government thinks is ultimately, there's nothing that the Europeans are ever going to do that's going to risk a border in Ireland.
Yeah.
Right? So they're just pushing it as hard and as hard as they can. And there was a quote in one of the papers the other day about Frost. It said, according to one of his friends, he's relishing every moment of it. It's like a game.
Oh, no. I've loads of other things I want to ask you. The term spin doctor... it's bandied about now, like snuff it awake. You're the original of the species. What is it like to be known as the grandfather of spin?
That's rubbish, though. That's rubbish. I'll tell you what, though. On the drive down from Shannon, there's a bike shop. I love cycling, right? And I was thinking, this feels like cycling territory to me. It was just starting to get a bit hilly. And I can't remember the name of the town or the village, but there was a big shop there, Spin Doctor Cycles. It was. So, Spin Doctor Cycles, I noticed you. Right, I've got no idea where it was.
They're trying to steal your thunder.
Well, so, but listen, let me tell you something. My favourite soundbite of all time, do you know what it is?
Go on.
Veni, Vidi, Vici. I came, I saw, I conquered. That is from Caesar. So, don't tell me that spin started. Look, what are the Ten Commandments? It's a piece of communication.
Yeah.
Brilliant piece of communication. So it's been around
forever. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbour's wife. Now, your relationship with Ireland, Alistair, goes back a long number of years. Just some of the people over that journey around the Good Friday Agreement, around Anglo-Irish relations, who impressed you? Who did you like to deal with over the years on this side of the pond?
Oh... You know, I wrote a book called The Irish Diaries, which is about the peace process. And I said at the start of that, that even though I kept a diary and I can say this happened then and this happened then and this happened that day and this happened that day, the thing couldn't have happened without that very peculiar constellation of personalities. They all brought something very, very special. They're all very, very different. I mean, I get a bit of grief when I say this in Ireland because I know he kind of, you know, his reputation got battered a bit after he left, a bit like Tony's has. But I really like Bertie Ahern, and I still really like Bertie Ahern. I always like Bertie Ahern.
Did you have a pint with him in Fagans?
No, I've been to Fagans, but I tell you what, we always had two things that stick out for me about Bertie. One was the fact that during that process, during the height of it, the Good Friday itself, his mother died and he went down south and then he came back and I just thought he showed incredible kind of commitment and dignity and courage. And the other thing is that there was once, I don't know if he remembers this, but there was once one of the rounds of talks that were going on and on and on and on. And Burnley, my team, had a massive game at Scunthorpe on the Saturday. And I knew that Bertie had a ticket for Man United at Newcastle. So I took it to one side and said, Bertie, we've got to set a deadline for this.
We cannot allow this
to go into Saturday. Yeah. And it didn't go into Saturday. No,
listen, I wanted to ask you as well, are you still playing the bagpipes?
I play the bagpipes a lot.
Right, did you bring them tonight?
I didn't know, partly because, I'll tell you why, it's because of Brexit.
Go on. I'll tell you why, it's because of
Brexit. No. The guy, the EY wanted me they wanted to have books to give out to all the people, right? My books. And so I put them in touch with an independent bookseller and the publishers. And they said that because of Brexit, it's going to be taking a lot longer to get shipping over. And we don't have time to do it. So, being a very, very good guy, I came basically dressed in what I'm wearing. I had a wheelie bag, and it's full of books. And if I'd have brought my bagpipes,
I wouldn't have been. So, it was a Hobson's choice. It was, books or bagpipes?
No, I'd always go with the bagpipes. But they didn't ask for the bagpipes. You're the first to ask for the bagpipes. Listen, if somebody gets me a decently tuned set, I'll play them.
All right, well, listen, it's been a real pleasure to meet you, Alistair Campbell. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. We appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Down to business on Newstalk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland. We understand business. Choose the bank that's here to help you rise to today's business challenges and tomorrow's.
One of the words that keeps coming up here is resilience. I've heard it last night, I heard it today. A lot of the deliveries are talking about it. So I wanted to just talk to some business people about their own sense of resilience. I'm delighted now to be joined by two of this year's finalists, Brody Sweeney of Camille Thai, Brian O'Sullivan of Zeus Packaging, and also by alumni, one of the alumni, and again a stalwart of this event, Mary McKenna, the founder of Tour America. Mary, I might start with you. Can you just define your interpretation of resilience first?
Yeah, sure. Look, I'm in the travel business, and if you think back to March of 2020, we've had no income coming into our business, and we've actually had to keep working to take care of our customers. So I think when I think of resilience, I think I'm really proud now to look back and say, I'm here, I'm stronger than ever. And I think history has helped me deal with resilience from September the 11th to even things like this, the encounter with the snow a couple of years ago where we set everybody up from home. So when COVID happened, I had no idea it was going to last as long as it did. But just through the past experience, you know, the company had cash. It knew it was going to hit some times that were going to be rocky. Didn't expect it to be so rocky. And through the experience of ash cloud and the snow, we had everybody ready to work from home. So really around that, that's about resilience of the business and then personal resilience. You know, how did I cope as a leader? And at the beginning, it certainly rocked me for a week or two, but making all the right decisions, you know, about the customer coming first, safety of the employees, really digging deep to ensure I was making the best decisions for my staff, my customers.
Great. We'll talk more in a second, Mary. Stay with us. That's really interesting. Let's talk to our second guest, Brian O'Sullivan of Zeus Packaging. Brian, I know you a long time. You did business with you over the years. And can I say it was always a pleasure to do business with you. But you've had your tough days as well.
Thanks, Bobby. Yeah, I think COVID for us was obviously extremely difficult. But Zeus, we've grown it to a business that's, I think at this stage, that's very resilient. We're across 26 countries, and our packaging portfolio is across hospitality, transit packaging, agricultural packaging. So our business is actually, we've built it to be very resilient. I think probably the most resilient time for me was back in 7 and 8, when we came into that massive crisis for us as a business, where we were very heavily borrowed. We had acquired lots of businesses. At the time, I wasn't sure about EBITDA or what it exactly meant, except that the banks were giving money, and I suppose I was naive, and I kept taking money. So the resilience that I learned through that time about, I suppose, being very, as Mary has just mentioned, making sure that we had protected cash, I learned it all during the time, the previous recession. So when COVID hit, yes, obviously we had no idea what was going to happen. I remember being in Zeus headquarters, because I was in Ireland at that stage, on the 17th of March, which was Patrick's Day. All my key team were there. We all went around and said, okay, what are we going to do? I had probably some insights, because I'd been in Italy twice in February and once in March, and I had seen what was starting to happen in February at that stage. I'd been in China in early January, And my general manager of the Chinese operation, when I came back, was asking me, was I okay, and you know, what was happening. So I think I had an idea that this thing was not going to be short-lived. So we made some very, very tough decisions actually on that day, on the 17th of March, where we had, unfortunately, a lot of salespeople that were on the road that were called into the hospitality sector. And I had to make tough decisions because I felt that the hospitality sector was going to be in trouble, and I wasn't sure when it would come out of it. So I think it was what I'd learned in the previous recession. I learned that I had to make decisions very quickly and be very resilient, and okay, that's what I did on that time.
Stand by, Brian. That's a really interesting story. And again, maybe a veteran of resilience to my right here, Brody Sweeney of Camille Thai. Brody, I know you've written a couple of books. Eating Bread is soon forgotten, but you know, what I admire most about you is getting back on the horse. And I think, you know, to have gone through the stress that you did in those early days, and then to just come back with another idea, I'm fascinated about where you got the energy the second time round.
Well, you know, this time round I'm an 11-year overnight success, just to say that, because I think people think, you know, we just started the Camille Thai kitchen business in the last few years, but in fact it's 11 years, and it was coming from going bust with O'Brien Sandwich Bars. And people ask me very nice questions like that, where do you get the resilience? And I always tell the story about the cornered rat, because in 2010 I was like a cornered rat. Mary might echo that in the sense of, like, what do? Just curl up in the corner and die?
Yeah.
Or do you come out fighting? And my instinct is to come out fighting. You know, practically, had I not done that, you know, I couldn't pay the mortgage. The kids were in, you know, private schools. I wouldn't be able to, you know, keep them there. And so, like, it's the cornered rat coming out.
Yeah.
I never thought that was very brave or noble. I just thought that's what cornered rats did. And so I came out, and I've been fortunate, you know, to hit on a business concept that's worked, that's, you know, really thrived through the pandemic, like unlike so many hospitality businesses, and to build a brilliant team, like a brilliant young team around me, who are running the business now and making me look very good.
And can I ask you this, Brody, again with Camille Thai, the learnings, and you know, like, let's face it, you had your good days in O'Brien's, you built a fine business, but are you more risk adverse now? Are you more cautious? Do you take the same risks that you might have taken a few years ago? I'm just interested in maybe how you view your view of the world now as opposed to then.
Look, I'm a risk junkie, Bobby, honestly.
Yeah.
I am, but I suppose they're more measured.
Yeah.
And the grey hair stands for something. The you know, you learn, and I think somebody spoke at the conference this morning about, you know, not making the same mistake 10 times in a row, and I'd say that's probably true for me too. So experience is worth something, but I think by definition, building a business, you're in the business of taking risks. You know, Brian's opened factories all over the place. You know, it's no guarantee they're going to work, or that, you know, there's not going to be a revolution there, or you know, and Mary's, I mean, what an example of resilience. I'm such an admirer, such a fan of the amazing, like, resilience shown. Like, her business was wiped out, and to keep going and to keep positive and keep a positive energy, and now to be still here, still on the stage, still fighting, amazing.
Yeah, Mary, you mentioned personal resilience there, and I'd just like to ask you a little bit more about that, because as Brody said there, the fact that you're still here and you're still in business is a massive, regardless of what the figures look like, you're still here, you're still trading. And, you know, do you take any satisfaction out of that?
You know, here I am at the Entrepreneur of the Year program, and what I find is this is my tribe, because, you know, business is about getting knocks and getting back up. And like Rosalind this morning said, she, you know, what does entrepreneur mean? And I was thinking, for me, you know, I never knew I was one, but actually what I have is resilience. I get back up, and life hasn't been easy. It's been tough for everybody here. And I had the capability of getting not back up. I was run over by a Jeep in 2004, and I remember even my, you know, I survived it. I'm very lucky to be alive. And so therefore, I always think, You know, we can all do something about it. We just have to change the attitude and not be a victim. And that was a decision I made. And so many good things have come out of it for me personally. And, you know, I was working really, really hard. I don't work as hard. I spend time with my family. I have, you know, great business, great staff. But it has been, I felt I got a bit of a sabbatical after 26 years or working since I was 18, just to stop and think. Yeah. And so it's been a great time to reflect.
And you mentioned reflection there, Brian. I think most of us had conversations with ourselves during COVID-19. Lots of people asked the question, you know, what's my purpose? Why am I here? What am I going to do next? Did you have any of those kind of conversations?
I think, Bobby, that we're here at this event, and it's a very special event. It's, you know, it's titled Entrepreneur of the Year, and there's lots of the alumni like Mary and many other people I've met in the last couple of days. I suppose you hear this, it's a very lonely place, and it's a lonely place to be the leader of the organization, whether that's the CEO or the boss or the owner, whatever the case may be. But we're built a special way. We're built the way we are. Of course, you have those conversations, but this is about resilience. I don't think it ever stops us. It's just not what it never even enters our heads. It's just throw the next challenge at us and give us what the challenge may be. Because, I mean, if there was no fences in front of us, I don't think we would even be happy or comfortable. What do I do in my business? I solve problems, you know what I mean? I know I've heard, oh yeah, but it doesn't say outside the door that my job is the problem solver, but that's what we are. So we like to have problems, we solve them, and we move on to the next one. And so that all feeds into the resilience that all of us are showing, whether it's during COVID or recession or product failure or whatever the case may be. It's really about getting up and drive it on.
Last word to Brody Sweeney. Brody, a wise man once said to me, positivity can't be overstated. Would you go along with that?
Well, I don't think blind positivity necessarily is a good thing, and I'm no stranger to flogging dead horses either, but I say that. So, but I mean, I do think people like Mary and Brian and the people gathered here, like that, we are optimistic by nature.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think not everybody has the wherewithal to pick themselves up from a setback. Yeah. And that's not their fault. That's just the way they're built. And we're in a fortunate group who have the wherewithal, you know, to take the knocks. And we do. That's what we do all day. I think that's so true about solving problems. And no sooner have we got one kind of tucked away in the next one, really.
I don't know
what's coming tomorrow. Who knows what's coming down the tracks tomorrow.
But, okay. Well, listen, I'd like to thank my guests. Brody Sweeney of Camille Thai, Brian O'Sullivan from Zeus Packaging, and Mary McKenna from Tour America. Thank you all for letting us into your world. That was a great conversation.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, Bobby. Thank you.
Now I want to introduce you to an Irish lady from Dublin, Rosaline Blair. She runs a company called AMS. It, for the last 23 years, employs almost 7,000 people. And Rosaline has been the founder, the CEO, and the chair of this company. And I'm delighted to meet her now. Good morning to you, Rosaline. How are you?
Good morning, Bobby.
Now, I just listened to your talk inside, and I was truly inspired by your journey. And again, you started with very humble beginnings. I think your honesty and integrity comes right through. You're self-taught. You went to London at a very young age with no contacts, and you built this amazing business. Just tell us a little bit more, if you would.
Well, look, I think it's easier. I think if you don't have a lot, it's actually you're not taking the risks. I think a lot of other people in big businesses do. So I just spotted a gap in the market, and you know, convinced my very first client to trust me, to outsource the whole of their HR function to me, and then managed to build some incredible people, and convince them to come on the journey, and that was really the start of the business.
Right. And then you said as well that oftentimes problems became opportunities. I thought that was very interesting, that you were faced with various challenges and somehow they landed into opportunities. Was that something that you created, or were you lucky along the way as well?
No, I think it's more of a mindset. I think if when hurdles come in your way, I think you either give up or you dig in, and find your resilience, and you find ways to sort of turn those challenges into opportunities. So I think it's just a mindset.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, Rosaline, was the whole role of private equity in business. And again, you conducted a management buyout in your own business. You've taken in equity many times. You've even got your own fund. And I was just, in your view, what business or what stage in business should one look at private equity? Just
Private equity is absolutely not for everyone. And you know, I think what's really, really important is be really clear as to why you're doing it. So there's loads of different ways to actually fund your business and fund the journey you're on. And actually, I would say right now, I don't think there's been as much opportunity. There's so much cash out there.
Yeah.
Actually, if you've got a good business, you will find investors. But I think the key thing is to have absolute clarity as to why you want them. So is it you're looking for international expansion? Is it you want to go on a digitization journey? And I think then key, if you are going down the private equity route, as I said, you know, if you've got a great business, you won't be short of private equity. But what's critical is actually finding the right private equity partner for you. So who is going to be able to support you beyond the cash? Who's got the expertise of working with businesses that have been on a transformation journey? You know, who've taken organisations on a growth journey outside of the UK. Is organic growth important to you, or actually are you looking to acquire businesses? Who's got the best track record of working with organisations in your sector? Yeah. I think they're the key thing. But most importantly, is being clear about what your own ambition for your business is.
And what many, you know, entrepreneurs and businesses at certain stages don't realise is that, you know, the rules change when somebody else owns a part of the business. So if you're a founder, you know, you're 100%, everything happens your way. All of a sudden, you have to go to board meetings, you have to, you know, write reports, some entrepreneurs find that very challenging.
Yeah, and look, I found it very challenging. I found the journey from being a founder, then into being a kind of managing a business with 100 people to, you know, as today we've got 7,000 people, albeit I'm just the chair today. But actually, you know, learning how to be a professional CEO and everything that came with that, it's a completely different business to being an entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
To being an entrepreneur. So actually somehow finding the way to balance and not lose that entrepreneurial spirit and keeping that across the organization, but equally with the responsibility of you now have substantial shareholders to answer to.
Yeah.
As well as clearly the most important thing, which is your customers and your people.
And, you know, private equity are generally pretty upfront about what their ambitions are.
Yeah.
They want to come in at a price. They want to get out at another price, and they don't have a 20-year interest.
No, and I think that's really important that you understand that if you're going to go down this route, you've got to be absolutely confident that you can deliver on the promise that you made to them on the way in. And you've got to be, you know, one of the other bits of advice I'd give is, you know, when you're looking at choosing a partner, is actually don't go for the references that they give you. Actually go and speak to the people where it hasn't gone so well in the investment, and actually how do they behave in that scenario?
Okay, well, listen, sound advice and sage advice from Rosaline Blair, 23 years in the business, AMS, founder and chair. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Down to business on Newstalk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland. We understand business. Choose the bank that's here to help you rise to today's business challenges and tomorrow's.
Now, I've just heard an amazing delivery around high performance in sport, and there are so many correlations between high performance and leadership in sport and in business. I'm delighted to be joined by Gary Keegan. He's a high performance expert and he has really had a stellar career. Gary, I just want to maybe introduce you to our listeners. Many of them will know you. Tell us firstly about your own sport, boxing.
Yeah, I guess, thanks Bobby for having me. Boxing was my sport, my passion, and I was very fortunate to have a volunteer career as a coach. A lot of people know this story. In 2002, the Irish government decided to invest in high-performance sport because the rest of the world had moved on. And they chose four sports, and boxing was one of them. And I got the role as the performance director for that new unit to establish and set out a plan to get us to a better place.
Yeah. And just on that, like, we saw investment in sailing, in rowing, in boxing, and we all of a sudden saw medals in those sports. So the relationship there between investment and focus and results, there's evidence of that.
Yeah, like it just proves that the potential is in this country if it's given the right support and we put the right environment around them. And to be fair, the government's decision around those four sports, three of them have gone on to win Olympic medals, and two of them have gone on to win consecutive Olympic medals. So yeah. that says a lot. That says the system is starting to work for us.
We had a barren period of no medals for 16 years, which I actually didn't realise. And then if you take between 2003 and 2017, if you include, I think it's World Championships and Olympic Championships, we got 78 medals. Again, I didn't know that.
Well, the number is actually 80 plus because they've come out of Tokyo with a gold and a bronze, as you know.
That's
so
right.
Another gold. They had a tough time in Rio with no medals, but Bernard Dunn is now the performance director of that program, former world champion himself. He's the performance director now, and he went on to turn that program around and get it back to winning ways, both at European, world and Olympic level.
Let's go back to boxing and your own role, you know, in the focus on, say, London 2012 and the preparation for that. And again, the importance of doing stuff differently, the importance of really feeling pain, being uncomfortable as a leader, going to places that people don't expect you to do. Tell us a little bit about that.
I just think that we as human beings are more willing to do that when we have a sense of a purpose that's greater than ourselves. And as a coach, you might want to train an Olympic medalist or train an Olympic champion, but you could go beyond that and train multiple, you know, so you could affect not just one boxer or one club, but you could affect numerous clubs and numerous boxers. And that just seemed like a higher purpose, had more meaning to it. And one of the things I spoke about today was that the purpose kept us on the mountain. It helped us to be resilient, and it kind of strengthened our resolve when we had those dark and difficult days. So, yeah.
So, and again, you told us about, which I thought was like that the marketplace for boxing was in Germany, was in France, but the records and the data shows that the Cubans and the Americans were the people who had won all the medals. But you choose to go to Russia. And again, there was learnings. And tell us a little bit about that.
But some of it is by chance. You know, you get very fortunate with a decision that opens up other opportunities for you. So Billy Walsh, as everybody knows, was the head coach. He was Irish. He's from Wexford. He goes on then to lead the US team. No one would ever thought an Irish coach would be appointed to a US team, but he was the guy that was. And it was important to us that it was an Irish person who led the program. But we also needed to have world-class technical expertise, which we didn't really have in the country. And we brought in Zori Antia, who is now the Ireland head coach. So this story is going on now 18 years. It's quite incredible. So Zori is the head coach of the program. He was also a coach in the Soviet Union team, the old Soviet Union team. So he had friends and he had keys to doors. And our strategy was to target Russia, not only because they were in the top three nations in the world consistently, but because Ryanair happened to fly pretty much anywhere in Europe, and we could, with the resources we had, we could manage our budget on competitions and training camps, and flights were a big cost. We were able to manage that because Ryanair was there to help us get there.
Great. And the learnings in Russia, again, you talked about the culture over there, this tough, dour, rough society where guys didn't want to let you in because, you know, they were afraid you're going to steal all their state secrets, but you broke through that.
Yeah, I actually think they potentially weren't afraid we would steal their state secrets because they didn't rate us. They didn't see us as a threat. As I said, we'd a half a team heading into Moscow at that time, and the guys weren't physically ready. We weren't technically sharp or good enough. And mentally, certainly, if those two things are missing, you're going to be even further behind.
Yeah.
So I think they were just allowing us in because Zori Antia had relationships with the coaches over there.
You were talking to an audience of made up largely of entrepreneurs here this morning. If we go back to those parallels of, you know, excellence in business and excellence in sports and really getting to the number one place, the parallels are incredible, aren't they?
Well, they are, but I think that when we see great sports teams, we don't have to look too far to see great leadership.
Yeah.
You know, when we see teams that inspire us, that their players seem to speak right and do the right things, it's, you know, as I said, you don't need to look too far. And business needs great leaders. Sport needs great leaders. If we're going to achieve things that are sustainable longer term, if people are going to be on the better side of those journeys because of the care that leaders have given them, well then, look, society is in a better place, never mind an organisation or a team.
You talk about medals growing dust, you know, so you get a medal or you win a big contract and it's done. You now you've done that, even no matter how big the achievement is. Then you've got to psych yourself up for the next thing. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, that's the uncomfortable space, because you have to keep facing into the conditions and the prevailing winds,
yeah,
that the medal is not going to make that next step any easier. And we always have doubt about the future. We always have a sense of uncertainty about what it'll be, and it creates some vulnerability within us. And I think if we're open to that vulnerability as leaders or as performers, we have a better chance of developing a new capacity to cope with the next part of the journey.
Yeah.
So that it's not just a one-off performance that you've achieved in a business or a one-off performance you've achieved on a pitch or in the ring. It's something that you can go and repeat time and time again. But repeating it time and time again doesn't make it any more comfortable.
No.
You still have to be willing to go into that uncomfortable space.
You also talked about leaders getting in their own way. And that's, again, a bit of self-doubt. It's about, it's related to the last topic there.
Well, my company is a high-performance advisory for business and sport, and 70% of our work is with business. So we work with corporate leadership teams and leaders to coach them in being stronger teams, to coach them in looking at their relationships across the team, what could make it more cohesive, recognizing that essentially the rest of the organization takes its cue from the leader,
yeah,
takes its cue from the leaders. And if the leaders are not able to uphold those performance standards around their relationships and their teamship, well, then it's very hard for the organization to be as cohesive as the leader wants it to be.
And I know it's probably an oversimplification, but you know, the merits of leading by example are clearly there.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the big thing, isn't,
yeah,
it? You know, and you know, if I want to be a player in a team who has influence and impact, I've got to first get my own house in order.
Yeah.
So I can't preach to others if I'm not delivering those principles or philosophy myself. So leading by example is really powerful. And I think leaders who will look in the mirror, who will look at themselves deeply, in the context of what they are responsible for, and that is people, ultimately.
Yeah.
And we talk about it all the time, but ultimately, we succeed through others as leaders. We don't succeed ourselves, we succeed through others. So that's the conduit through which organizations or teams are successful. And if the leader is in service to his or her people, well then the organization has always got to benefit from that, at least in my experience.
Yeah. And last question, to go back to boxing, the next Olympics, our investment, our track record, how confident would you be on the back of recent successes?
Well, I'm hoping that Kelly Harrington decides to stay with us for the next 3 years, because I think there's an opportunity for her to do something that no one else has done.
Yeah.
So that would be amazing. And the fact that it's a 3-year journey into Paris as opposed to 4 is going to change the dynamic a bit. It's going to create a challenge around potentially some of the talent pathways and getting boxers from that development stage into ready for Olympic competition. But there's quite a bit of experience there. And the fact that Bernard now has an Olympic cycle, a very difficult Olympic cycle with COVID under his belt, and has come out the other side with success, puts us in a very good position, I would think, as in rowing, very good position to step in and hopefully increase the level of output that we got in Tokyo.
Okay, well look, it's been absolutely fascinating to hear your analysis, Gary. Gary Keegan there, high performance expert and a man who really, really walks the talk. Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Bobby.